Inexperienced in agriculture, the pilgrims were also not woodspeople. Indeed, they were so incurious about their environment that Governor Bradford felt obliged to comment in his journal when Francis Billington, my ancestor's son, climbed to the top of a tall tree to look around. As Thoreau noted with disgust, the colonists landed at Plymouth on December 16th. But it was not until January 8th that one of them went as far away as 2 miles. And even then the traveler was, again, Francis Billington. Huddled in their half-built village that first terrible winter, the colonists rarely saw the area's inhabitants, except for the occasional shower of brass or claw-tipped arrows. After February, glimpses and sightings became more frequent. Scared, the pilgrims hauled 5 small cannons from the Mayflower and emplaced them in a defensive fortification. But after all the anxiety, their first contact with Indians went surprisingly easily. Within days, Tisquantum came to settle among them, and then they heard his stories of his years in Europe. Captain Hunt took his captives to Malaga, Spain, where he intended to sell them. The Indians' appearance in this European city surely caused a stir. Not long before, Shakespeare had griped in The Tempest that the populace of the much bigger city of London would not give a doit, a small coin, to a lame beggar, but will lay out 10 to see a dead Indian. Hunt managed to sell only a few of his captives before local Roman Catholic priests seized the rest. The Spanish Church vehemently opposed brutality toward Indians. In 1537, Pope Paul III proclaimed that Indians themselves indeed are true men and should not be deprived of their liberty and reduced to our service like brute animals. The priests intended to save both Tisquantum's body by preventing his enslavement and his soul by converting him to Christianity. It is unlikely that Tisquantum was converted, though it's possible that he allowed the friars to think he had been. In any case, this resourceful man convinced them to let him return home, or rather, to try to return. He got to London, where he stayed with John Slaney, a shipbuilder with investments in Newfoundland. Slaney apparently taught Tisquantum English while maintaining him as a curiosity in his townhouse. Meanwhile, Tisquantum persuaded him to arrange for passage to North America on a fishing vessel. He ended up in a tiny British fishing camp on the southern edge of Newfoundland. It was on the same continent as Patuxet, but between them were 1,000 miles of rocky coastline and the Mi'kmaq and Abenaki alliances, which were at war with one another. Because traversing this unfriendly territory would be difficult, Tisquantum began looking for a ride to Patuxet. He extolled the bounty of New England to Thomas Dermer, one of Smith's subordinates, who was then staying in the same camp. Dermer was excited by Tisquantum's promise of easy wealth. On May 19, 1619, accompanied by Tisquantum, Dermer set out for Massachusetts. What Tisquantum saw on his return home was unimaginable. From southern Maine to Narragansett Bay, the coast was empty. Utterly void, Dermer reported. What had once been a line of busy communities was now a mass of tumble-down homes and untended fields overrun by blackberries. Scattered among the houses and fields were skeletons bleached by the sun. Slowly, Dermer's crew realized they were sailing along the border of a cemetery 200 miles long and 40 miles deep. Patuxet had been hit with special force. Not a single person remained. Tisquantum's entire social world had vanished.